So you're going to just keep it in a plastic?
No. This is a common misconception, James. Can I call you James? What it is that I take them out of the cellophane wrap that you get in the shop, and I put them in a resealable one so I can take them out, watch them, put them back in the plastic case, because steel, you know, affects with dust and everything like that. And some of them are worth quite a lot of money if I decide to sell them on. So I like to keep them in pristine condition.
Hello there, and welcome to episode 11 of the Nothing But Respect podcast, an unofficial Celtic Football Club podcast. I'm OCE, and today I'll be joined by Bruce, Hunter, and a special guest of the pod, Lee. We'll take a look back at the domestic wins against Dundee United and Hearts. And we'll also preview the top of the table clash for this weekend, Celtic vs Aberdeen. Welcome to episode 11 of the Nothing But Respect podcast. I'm OC, and today I'm joined by Bruce, Hunter, and first-time guest to the podcast, Lee.
Hello, it's a pleasure to be in the Bears' den.
Since you last joined us, Celtic have had two domestic games, one against Dundee United and a cup tie against Hearts. They won both of these ties rather convincingly, so I'll just see what he's made of these games. I'll start with the guest of the pod, Lee. What did you make of Dundee United?
I've only seen the highlights, as I was too busy watching Premier League football all day on Sunday, hungover. I can only base it on, you know, 5 minutes worth of footage, but Celtic looked pretty good. I expected them to make an arse of it, knowing how bad Dundee had been playing. But, you know, they really turned on it, the style, it seems. But that's kind of the problem, isn't it? It's rubbish against rubbish when they should be doing all right, and then steamroll the rubbish teams. So, yeah, it seemed a good result, but kind of not really that important, I think.
Kind of echo a lot of what Lee said. It was kind of routine. I'd said last week on the pod I expected either a tight 2-1 or a convincing 5-1, so I was kind of close. It was, like Lee said, it's just kind of, it feels like turn up when it doesn't really matter that much, and then in the big games you just don't really, and I kind of feel like when we do win like that, it gets to a situation where maybe players think, oh, well, we've redeemed ourselves for Thursday night by winning 5-0, but just kind of routine and not very exciting. But quality of some of the goals were brilliant. Commons' second goal was a peach, and his penalty was well taken as well.
Bruce, even though I was slagging Stevie for us, I think it's got to be said, Dundee United are awful, which is a shame because they were one of the better teams in the last couple of years. I agree with the two boys. I agree with Hunter a lot when he says that the players think they've redeemed themselves, but they quite clearly haven't. I think they probably did meant redeem themselves last night, in truth, because that was a good one away at Tynecastle. But Dundee United was good. I predicted a nut in each, because I just thought it was going to be one of the home games that we've seen for Celtic. What a difference an early goal get. You know, when they score early, they look as if they can score 4, 5, 6. It should have been about 12. I think for as good, Celtic were good, no, don't get me wrong, they did play quite well. There were some lovely football getting played in the first half, but I think the Dundee United are a really, really bad team at the minute, and it's a shame. We can only beat what's in front of us, obviously, we did.
I agree. I thought, like you say, Dundee United were terrible. Pat Lennon's got a hell of a job on his hands there. I thought it was not interesting. It's sort of good, sort of bad that Dial up at Commons. I didn't really agree with it, but at the same time, at least that's him put a line under it.
I think he had to pick him. If you don't pick him, it all rumbles on another week, you know. You know, I wouldn't have had an issue if he was benched. You could say that he deserved his punishment. But when the manager and everyone says, that's it, over and done with, you kind of just need to get on with it. Otherwise, it just gets dragged out even more, and probably all your soccer scoreboards are filled with people talking about it for another week. Especially when you've got like a big cup game coming up, you just sort of want to, that's it, over and done with, let's move on.
Nah, I agree with Lee there. When I seen the teams announced, I was a bit pissed off because I thought he should have been benched, but I think, like Lee says, it does then, it rumbles on, and it is easier just to draw a line under it and just have it be done with.
Aye, definitely. And like you say, we played well. Other positives, obviously, Tierney was outstanding, and it was good to see Semyonovic finally back, but he played all right.
He's going to score for about 40 yards before the season's done.
He looks like a strike, which we're not he's going to do well, because I don't think Boyata looks like being that sort of player like Van Dijk, who likes to take a stroll forward in league games. So no, that was good to see. But that was pretty much business as usual, what you'd expect from Celtic in a home game.
And as James says, it frustrates you when they beat like Dundee United 5-0, because you think, could you not have put in that sort of same effort or, you know, swagger a few days earlier? It just frustrates you. You think, well, I'm not going to celebrate a 5-0 when, you know, 72 hours earlier you got humped 3-1 and, you know, didn't put a foot in it. It just frustrates you. Like, how can you can't judge how good this team is. That, you know, it's easy, okay, to win 5-0 against Dundee United, they're terrible, but you sort of, they'll get the plaudits that they would probably deserve for that if they do it a few games earlier. It just frustrates you.
I think what Lee means by that is if they'd have beat Mulder and then they roll on and beat the United 5-0, and I think you're talking about what a good time it is to be a Celtic fan and how good they are to watch.
Yeah, whereas, it's just thin margins.
Aye, whereas, like, obviously Mulder are a lot better than the United, but Mulder aren't that good either. It's, I think it's psychological with them. They froze the other week. Whereas on my difference, it's just the difference in early goal season, because you see it when we play teams at home, if they don't score that early goal, you know, it gets to 60, 70 minutes and then it becomes, well, we can't put Van Dijk up front anymore, but that was what it used to get like. You just see nothing each draws, you know, happening for about the 40th minute. So it's good to win 5-0, but I think there's a lot of work to be done if they want to forget what happened in the mould.
I don't think anybody's for using that Dundee United game to forgive them, but obviously it is frustrating, like you say, that 3 days earlier they're failing to turn up. But I mean, no, it's what you expect. I think we have been a lot better this season after European games, which isn't an excuse, but it is at least improving that way. Right, so moving on, during the week we took a trip to the capital to play Hearts in the quarterfinal of the League Cup. We won the game 2-1, a goal from Lee Griffiths and a goal by Tom Rogic. So I'll pass you over to Lee, who was actually the only one of us who was at the game. So what did you make it, Lee?
Well, I was in the Hearts end first and foremost. I had no intention of going to the game, but it was like £10 for a student ticket in the Hearts end, so I popped along. I tried to get a ticket before I went into work on the morning, and I was like, oh, can I get a ticket for the Hearts end, blah blah blah. I went, oh, have you bought a ticket with us before? And I was like, oh, no, I've got a few at the gate before. Oh, Celtic fans will try and buy tickets to sit in the home end if they can't get one. So sadly we need a former booking reference. I was like, that's just shocking. I'm a jambo and stuff. And went, oh no, sorry. So one of my friends got me a ticket, so I went along with them. I mean, it was a bit weird to be in amongst sort of the Hearts fans. Like, they make some racket when they sing that Hearts, Hearts, Glorious Hearts, and whatever the other one, or one other song they sing is. So it felt a bit weird to sort of sit there in silence. And I thought the first half was pretty atrocious. Hearts were so deep. They never really came out of their own half. And Celtic, just that sort of same formation, that 4-2-3-1, and it was really frustrating. I really like Armstrong, but he was just wasted outside on the left. James Forrest, I thought, was non-existent. I thought Johansson was terrible, deep. And it just, like, nothing was really clicking. It was just one of those nights you thought, oh, please don't go to, like, extra time. And then the second half, it got a bit more tetchy and a bit more competitive, but it never really looked in doubt that Celtic wouldn't win. There was almost no tension that you'd sort of get when you would go to Tynecastle thinking, oh, Hearts could score, or, you know, the first goals are kind of, you know, close here. But, you know, once Celtic scored, and then there was it was a stunning goal. It was so hard not to cheer and wind up all the jambos that were sat around you, but for my own benefits, just sat on my hands and just gave it a wee applause underneath my legs. It was a stunning goal, absolutely stunning, and great work to set up Rogic for the second. But I don't know, it didn't feel, it's the same for a lot of things nowadays. The tension of a night at Tynecastle wasn't there anymore. It felt like a bit of a routine night, that the Hearts fans didn't really seem up for it. The Celtic fans, by and large, were pretty quiet, apart from, you know, some songs here and there until they scored. It was a kind of, you know, an average quarter-final as opposed to a special game, really. And I kind of came away from it. Usually I'm at Tynecastle and I come away and think, oh man, that was amazing. You're kind of buzzing from a good performance. But it just felt a bit, yeah, that was good, onwards and upwards. And I was a bit annoyed. I didn't feel G'd up about a win. Maybe that's been in the Hearts end, but it's hard to say.
I don't know if it's maybe also a case of it being the League Cup, and I think a lot of people just aren't really that invested in the League Cup anymore.
I know, but even then, it's still against Hearts. You'd probably say are kind of our biggest historical rival in the league at the moment. And, you know, Tynecastle under the lights on a dark night, and it's always usually a bit special. Maybe it was the fact that Celtic had just half a stand this time. Usually when a whole stand, that, you know, that brings a lot of more energy, and it just felt quite quiet, really. It just felt like a bit of a boring game. It could easily have been at Parkhead. You know, it just didn't feel special, and I felt that was a bit of a shame for me, kind of, as a fan, that I love Hearts away, and, you know, I try not to miss it, and that was probably the first time I've ever had to sit in the Hearts end for an away game there, and it just had a bit of a shine taken off. It just felt routine.
Hunter, what did you make of the game?
Obviously, as it was Scottish football, it wasn't on telly. I would never have got a ticket for it anyway. I wouldn't have got away from working time to go to the game if I could have got a ticket, so I was going to have to rely on the radio for it. And so, I mean, it was actually quite good to listen to a game on the radio again, because I've not done that in such a long time. Kind of, there was a bit of excitement around it, because you don't have a clue what's going on, really, but I've done Asda at the same time, so, I mean, I was more occupied about getting my shopping than I was really invested in the game, and it kept cutting out. But I could have easily seen us losing that game last night. Any type of win would have been, you know, fine by me. We got that win, we're into the semi-finals. I like to see Griffiths scoring, because I like my strikers scoring in every single game, so if I'm to score again, and obviously he was scoring into Tynecastle, so that was good. Great work for Rogic's goal as well, and we're into the semi-final, so no complaints. And a day out of Hampden, which I know everybody hates Hampden, but I think I'm in the vast minority who actually quite like a day out of Hampden.
Like you say, Hampden is probably where the teams that are left, and it's probably going to be half empty again, so I don't really enjoy Hampden on their days. But
be the same in the Scottish Cup as well, but I mean, it would be the same as if it was at Celtic Park, it would be half empty anyway. I feel like if you go to Hampden, it feels like it's meant to be more of a special occasion, because it's in the National Stadium and it's synonymous with semi-finals and cup finals, and that's kind of, I don't go to Scotland games, so it's kind of really the only time I go to Hampden, and I feel like it makes it a bit of a bigger deal.
Aye, they let him make me hate Hampden, but I'm starting to recover now.
Oh, aye, there's some horrible times at Hampden under TG, but Dylan's got us believing again.
Bruce, what did you make of the Hearts game?
I thought it first off was quite boring. I thought Celtic were in control of the game, to be fair, before actually dominating it. Hearts came in there a wee bit as the first off went on, but I always thought Celtic looked more likely. But the game, for me, changed when Rogic came onto the park. Just watching the highlights now, actually. I thought when Rogic came on, Celtic got a bit of urgency about them. It was direct. I mean, I've just seen a goal. The Griffiths goal was sensational.
Oh, it was just so beautiful, because I was looking down on it, and it was almost, I don't think it'll be one of those goals I can ever forget, because you're just looking down, and it's just so magic, that light touch, and what a finish. It was quite a unique kind of viewpoint to have, just looking down on something that special so close.
And the way it just, I mean, it glides, the way he glides by the guy and then just opens his body up, and, I mean, it's stunning. And to be fair to Griffiths, he's got, you know, we talk about him as a poacher, but he's got that in him. He's got a hint for the kind of the extraordinary, you know what I mean? He showed that at Hibs, and he can put the ball in the back of the net for anywhere, so I was happy for him. But it was one of the games where you always felt the first goal was going to win it. So when the Hearts goal was ruled offside, you know, it was probably a let-off, because it was a tight game, and first goal gave Celtic the urgency. For the second goal, Griffiths was brilliant again. It's a great finish by Rogic, who he actually does great to get in front of the defender. Griffiths was brilliant, and I know I said his goals get him out of trouble, and I think it's true to a degree. I think are people starting to forget Hooper in terms of Griffiths v Hooper. I think a lot more people are on the Griffiths side now. And I think Griffiths will be the next into the 100 club.
Collins. Well, Collins has got like 12 goals to go.
Oh, right, aye, Collins.
I think Griffiths will get there eventually. That he's a really enjoyable play to watch. But I think the thing that goes for Hooper over, say, Griffiths is that, you know, it's not really Griffiths' fault that he doesn't have as many big game opportunities to score that special goal that Hooper did. Hooper had the Champions League games, but he had the Rangers games where he seemed to score all the time. Whereas Griffiths, I think he would score goals definitely against Rangers, you know, any day of the week. But he doesn't have as many opportunities to star in those big games, the big nights, the big games. You know, he's got to make do with sort of run-of-the-mill games.
But he did score in the semi-final against Rangers, and all right.
Yeah, for sure.
Atrocious. But he scored twice against Malmo at home, which was probably their biggest home game. Scored against Fenerbahce.
But his first European goal, which is down there.
I think the problem for Griffiths is that he has scored in these European games, but it doesn't have the same narrative as Hooper, whereas Hooper was scoring, you know, say the goal to kick us off against that Russian mob. I can't remember the...
Spartak.
And then Celtic go through into the last 16. Whereas Griffiths is scoring these goals in sort of European games, but every other part of the team is maybe letting it down, that the narrative he scores against Fenerbahce but ends up a draw, and the focus is on Ambrose. He scores two brilliant goals against Malmo, and then the team blow it in the last minute. It's that he's scoring the goals, but the narrative isn't there to make him star.
I agree, though.
Because I think his header against Malmo was a great goal, and people have kind of... It'll not be remembered as fondly as other Celtic goals because of the result, but that was a really great goal, which I've only really seen. I'm not comparing them to this guy, but it's a goal Larson used to score. You know, they kind of headers where it looked, and it was small
dead.
Guys, you know what I mean? The boys need base on it.
He had no right to even get near it.
That's what he does for me. And I think a lot of people, I love Hooper, don't get me wrong, but I think with Griffiths, I'm not saying it because Hooper was English, because I think Hooper did get what it was to play for Celtic, but I just think with Hooper, you did, in my opinion anyway, he was always kind of playing for a future in England. You know, he'd been doing it League One and Championship, he came up here, scored the goals in Europe and get his big move, whereas I think Griffiths just loves being a Celtic player. You know what I mean? I thought it's no dispute he grew up in a Hibs fan, but I think he genuinely loves playing for Celtic, and he's got his problems, as we all know, but I think the majority of the fans are on his side now, because I don't think that's because he's a Celtic player. I think a lot of Celtic players, the jury was out on Griffiths, but you know, you'd like people leaving games because he was getting applauded on to part in that, but I just think the way he's played the last, say, year, he's really got everybody on side again, and that's only his credit.
Look how hard he's worked. Like, that's what the fans look for, and they can see it from him, because you're thinking this time last season Gudetti was their number one striker.
Aye.
Like, Griffiths didn't come in the team until about January.
I mean, his goal was great, right, but see his work for a second goal, that just adds another kind of like vindication for him. I mean, it's a brilliant bit of play for him, and on his weaker side.
I think the thing for him is that you look at him and you think, this is the best club that he'll ever, you know, go to, that this is the best ever chance.
Aye.
You know, he'll get with Hooper. You know, I always thought he would go on to do something special. I could see him playing for England, so you sort of always felt you were lucky to have Hooper. You thought, oh, he's going to go on to something great. Was Griffiths, this is probably going to be the pinnacle of his career. You don't look at him just now and think, oh, he's going to be an international for someone like England, or you don't see him, you know, lighting up the Premier League. And there's nothing wrong with being a great Celtic player at this sort of level. But with Hooper, we sort of had maybe more misguided expectations about what he could do.
Oh, definitely. And I always, like, at the back of my mind was, like, Hooper is always playing for that big move, like, I suppose, because I think he grew up a Spurs fan.
Yeah, he did.
And, like, I know Villas-Boas came to see him, and he scored a hat-trick. I always thought he would do better than QPR, who then ended up going to Norwich, but when QPR were interested in him, it looked as if he was going there and they get relegated, but... I think you just see how much he appreciates playing for Celtic, and we as fans appreciate it back, and he looks like he's going to be here for a long time.
Aye, absolutely. And then just look at Hooper, he's an emergency loan signing for Sheffield Wednesday during the week. Now that's...
Yeah.
I feel bad for Hooper because he never made any qualms about... He wasn't up at Celtic because he used to listen to Celtic games on the radio when he was a young boy, or, you know, he never had Celtic is his Sabutio team and that. He never claimed to be a big fan. He came up and scored goals and was great at it, and he got his move, and it's not worked out for him, and I feel for him a lot. I'll talk him back tomorrow, truth be told.
Yeah, I feel sorry for him as well, and I don't know him as a person, but he just seems like, I don't think he's got that fire and passion. I think that season in Norwich, he probably went down with a lot of confidence, you know, scoring on all these different levels. And he went down and he hasn't really done much. Maybe scored the odd goal here and there, maybe the second goal in a 3-2 loss sort of thing. But, you know, I feel sorry for him. But I wonder how much of it is attitude, that how much desire and passion does he have to be a top player? Because I honestly thought at one point he could be an England player. Maybe that's, you know, me being foolish. But he looked like he could be in that England team when he was scoring goals for fun in the Champions League. But now look at him, he's just going to be a nobody in a few years if he keeps going the way he's going.
Well, that year that we were in the Champions League with him, he got injured just before the Barcelona game, and I'm sure Hodgson came out and says that he was going to be in the November squad as well for the friendlies. That's the closest he's ever came.
But I think that was just an easy thing to say.
I don't know, because Hodgson picked Foster when he was at Celtic.
But Foster was genuinely, in my opinion, world class in the Champions League games.
But Hooper was the top scoring Englishman in the Champions League that season. Like,
I'm not on Hooper. I just think I always thought at the time that was easy for Hodgson to say.
Yeah.
Because there was a lot of pressure on him to pick Hooper. And even when he picked Foster a lot, I mean, put Foster in the squad, it was like in a token. It was only because Joe Hart had a really bad game against Sweden when Ibrahimovic lobbed him in a free kick that people started to say, this boy Foster's playing but he's skinned for Celtic in the Champions League. He's not just doing it in the league, you know, we can't just dismiss it because, I mean, I can't remember an era Foster in the Champions League. He just made great save after great save and he forced his way in, whereas Hooper's bro was a great finisher. You know, his goal against Spartak Moscow was an absolute peach. But Lee's right, if Celtic would have lost that game 4-1, I mean, nobody would really have remembered. I mean, remember his goal in the 4-2 game against Rangers at Ibrox? That was one of Hooper's best ever goals, but you wouldn't normally associate it because they get beat. Whereas, you know, a lot of no saying Hooper's lucky, because I mean, it was him that was scoring the winners most weeks, but I definitely feel from the way his career's turned out. But I think Lee's right. I think he's just one of the modern football players that more that he sees it as a job, but he just turns up and scores goals and see what happens for him. And he's not been able, once the goals dry up, you know, he's fun wanting a wee bit, especially during Norwich.
Did he not have it that he was going to go to Sheffield United at the end of the transfer window, but turned it down because he couldn't get like an executive box? Or was that just a load of...
He came out and says this. I denied it on Twitter.
It's an odd rumour.
Tweeted not true.
I tweeted not true.
I don't know how much
ITV football or something.
I read that and I thought it wouldn't surprise me. He just seems that you see him on Instagram and he seems like that sort of person that you wouldn't be surprised. And I just thought it was an odd rumor to be kind of fake. So
I know, but it'd be a weird one for the club to, you know, kill the deal. They're paying him $32.5 grand a week. So if they're willing, and they were going to be paying Norwich a fee, so could they not then give up a box? You know, for, you know, half the price of his wages.
Yeah, it was an odd one. I don't know how it probably was a load of nonsense. I just thought it was an odd story to appear. I've never kind of heard that one before.
Aye, it's kind of one of the things where it's so strange it's got to be true, because how could they not just make up a rumour like he's failed his medical or something, but they've actually came out and gave you a reason, i.e. he wants a VIP box and we're not getting him one, but he said it wasn't true, so need to go for him.
I remember back to Hearts, I thought we were, like you say, it was a flat first half, but second half the tackles started flying in. Forrest was very poor, so he went off and Rogic came on. Rogic was questioned a lot this season whether he could do it at places like Tynecastle, and I think he stood up and done it again. I mean, he had a howler at Fir Park a few weeks ago, which got him dropped, but I think he's doing enough to stay in the team for now. I thought Boyata was excellent as well.
I thought Boyata was good. I thought Boyata, contrary to what you said earlier, Boyata actually came out of defence a couple of times, played a couple of good passes at wide. I like Boyata, something about Boyata I really like. Yeah. I think when we get beat, This is going to sound daft, right, but when we get beat, he looks a lot worse, because I generally have much making the mistakes, but I think when we win, there's a lot of it's down to him. And a Fenerbahce game at home, I thought he played really well last night, and I thought he played really well on Sunday, and I think he needs a wee bit of time. But you know, people jump, once people have marked you down as a dud, any time you make a mistake, you're going to be jumped on. So I think you need to give him and Simunovic time. Is that a second time played together?
Third time.
Third time.
He played in Ajax as well.
Ajax, yeah. They've still a partnership together. I like the boy Simunovic. I think different to Van Dijk in a lot of ways. I don't think he's as nonchalant. He can bring the ball out. He takes no shite. He batters the ball at players. You know, he doesn't just pass it, he volleys at him, and he looks like he's not shy to come forward and take a shot. And see, I mean, I know he's not going to score every time he does it, but see, when you're playing teams that are playing nine at the back and, you know, there's no space out wide, you know, sometimes you need a player that can do that and just have a shot and mix it up a wee bit. So I think he'll be a good player. He is a bit suspect in the air though, but I just think that the Wanma and So are really good at roughing up defenders, and hopefully that's what Cole will give us that dimension. That
I'm still shocked that Lustig's miss as well, though. That was a howler.
Oh, yeah, that was a sitter.
That was so perfectly worked as well until the finish. You can see how they've done that a million times in training, and then It's literally got a whole couple of aim
at. I just sat there just looking at it thinking, you know when you just sit in shock for a minute just thinking, how the hell could someone miss that? You just sort of play it over and you think, it's easier to miss than, you know, score it. It was baffling.
Yeah.
I mean, thankfully it was 3-0 at the time and stuff.
2-0.
Well, 2-0 at the time, but you thought, if that had been any other point in the game, you could have regretted that, but...
Especially if that was him.
I think he was he had been bamming up some Hearts player a few minutes earlier, and you just thought it was perfectly set for him to score the third clinching goal, and then he just, you know, misses the beat.
Yeah, if that had been at 0-0, you'd have been at that point of the game, you'd have been going off your head that he missed such a sitter. But the fact that it was 2-0, it kind of gets brushed under the carpet.
Aye. Captain's armband, name, like you say, he was winding up a Hearts player. I saw a picture, and we did the Bruni to. Callum Patterson. No, I thought the team was... they played better. It was a bigger test than the two games, obviously. But like you say, people... You have some wee teams in SPL coming to Celtic Park saying it's lost its fear factor. But I think that's very true for Tynecastle. I used to hate going Celtic go to Tynecastle. Yeah. Do you think it was just going to be a rough game where Celtic didn't have the greatest record?
I always felt like a lot of war going there.
I mean, it used to be poisonous, but I still think... I think there's still a lot of no good feeling, but Celtic fans were very... and Hearts fans were very tolerant of each other last year because Hearts were, you know, running away with the championship and some other team won they. And I think this year is the first time that Celtic and Hearts are kind of back at it again. I think in a couple of years they'll be back to normal, but I just think there's still a wee remnants of good feeling about the teams.
I think the problem is that Hearts don't have any bastards in the team anymore. It used to be you'd be looking down on, you'd expect Brown to be eyeing up Ian Black, that you'd have all these various players that, you know, teams need that kind of the bastard player that'll wind up the opposition, you know, put in the crunch and tackles. I mean, Hearts are just a team of kids now. There's no one there that, you know, they'll try and play their football, they'll do their thing, but there's no one there that's going to rise to the bait. They're not really fussed. They're not players that are looking for a bam up or anything like that. So that kind of takes away a bit of the rivalry. I'm sure, you know, we've got Scott Brown, Lustig, a few, you know, Commons, a few other players that, you know, I've seen in the past fairly hate Hearts. But there's no one on that Hearts team now you think, oh, he's a dick, or, oh, I really
I think hate the last, him. The last one did go straight to Jamie Hamill.
Aye, and that's about it. Got a streak about him.
No, he's not intimidating with his little wispy moustache.
Jamie Hamill and Ian Black were never intimidating either.
But they were always people that would rise up to it. They would try and they'd just try and kick anything that moved, and, you know, Brown would love to wind up either one of them. And, you know, they always sense that they were playing for the jersey and playing for a, you know, for a good kickabout, really. Whereas, you know, the Hearts team last night are just a bunch of kids, really, and that takes away the sort of rivalry. It's, you know, it's not the Hearts that we kind of know in before, where they go toe to toe with you. It's just not there.
That would have suited them last night as well, because obviously with Brown pulling out in the warm up, that would have been a perfect time for them to play that sort of game.
The boy Rossi, who did go at Griffiths, but I don't know what that was about.
They just seemed to have a little kind of, yeah, I think it was someone was pulling on one of the defender's shirts, and then it all just escalated, and I think Griffiths couldn't help himself. He'd not really been in the game at that point, and I think he just wanted a bit of an argy-bargy, but there's just not much of a rivalry there. There's no kind of big match-up. It's a heavyweight versus a lightweight now, I think.
No, like you say, throughout the last four, where we'll play, you know, St Johnstone, Ross County, Hibs, Dundee United. Like you were saying, Hunter, you didn't really buy any League Cup. I think it's important. It was really important for Dylan last year to get his first trophy. And I think again this year he's going to need to get that first trophy out of the way.
But I think Neil Lennon's the first Celtic manager in a long time that hasn't been his first trophy won. Has won a trophy. Stratton won it his first year, and Neil won it his first year. Janssen, Bogrish won it when he was manager or caretaker. So it's fairly important to them in their first year. I think what does happen is it's part of treble, so it's important. But like, if you just win the League Cup and don't win anything else, it's Celtic. It's not going to be a successful season, is it?
It's like, it's important in terms of being part of a treble, and you're saying about how it's important for maybe the manager to get the first trophy in the board. But I just don't think fans really care about it unless it's going to be part of a treble. They're talking about having to revamp the competition now.
I think what the whole thing is you play the quarterfinals in October, and then you don't play it in January, February, so you kind of forget all about it, and then you go, who we got next week? You're like, oh, we've got Hearts and the League Cup. You're like, semi-final, you know, it's like a big game. Well, suppose a big game sprung on you. So I think if they were to, because they're a European football these days, you know, there's hardly any 3 weeks, but if they were to revamp it in a way that we could finish it in November, like the old Challenge Cup, then I'd be all for it.
I think it comes at like an important time of the season as well for Celtic. Why I think it's important, because, you know, you get the we play a few weeks ago, sort of when you've just started, maybe been gone through to the Champions League or you've been knocked into the Europa League. So say you get knocked into the Europa League. If you get knocked out in the stage of the cup where you first go in, that already adds to a kind of negative, you know, vibe of failure. And then you get this sort of stage of the competition now. Whereas if we got knocked out last night, it kind of builds on a bit of bad negativity if you're not doing well in Europe. And then you come to the next stage, which is about February time. So if you've got into the next stage of Europe and then you've been knocked out and then you've got the cup not long after and you do bad in that, it comes at times where you want to keep a bit of momentum going if things aren't going well in Europe, that you've got to keep the fans on side, that, you know, you could be not doing shit in Europe and then not knocked out of the cup a week or so later. And that's how, you know, negative feelings come about and, you know, a bit of discomfort in the squad, I think.
Yeah, well, that's what happened last season, because after Inter put us out, it was just, all we heard from Dyla was, we're going for the treble, we're going for the treble. Mm-hmm. So.
But cups are just a bonus, apparently.
I still have help.
Well, we have no right to be feel entitled that we should win a cup. They are just a bonus, so I hear. So.
Right, well, picking up on that from what certain Celtic Twitter people posted last night. I agree and I disagree, because obviously we should be favourites to win both cups most years, but at the same time, I would never sack a Celtic manager for not winning cups.
I don't think anybody thinks you should sack a Celtic manager for not winning cups. I think it's the fact that people have this kind of, oh well, you know, if we don't win the cup, oh well, you know, it would have only been a bonus anyway. But with the weight that we are in this country, we should win in the cup.
No, see, I think we should be winning the cups every year, no matter who. It's in the league. I think what the point Hunter's making is it should be alright to be angry at no winning the League Cup. You know, it's no sense of entitlement to say we went out and get beat off Morton. You know what I mean? That's terrible with Morton. Wait, is that? That's no sense of entitlement, I think. And my opinion is you can't win every trophy, but that doesn't mean you need to accept being happy at getting beat. You know, if the team get put out of the cup, it's darn spot on. You don't sack Celtic managers for winning the League Cup. But if as Lee said, it could add up. You know, if Hearts were to earn 1-3 last night, the pressure's just mounting. And we have Aberdeen on Saturday. So it comes at the right time. My idea for the League Cup would be to revamp it and play it early doors, but the way we play in Europe probably be hard.
They're talking about revamping it for next season, but the teams involved in Europe wouldn't start, but everybody else would start in July, and it'd be like group stages, regional groups.
If it was to replace like a pre-season, then I wouldn't be against it. Like, I think you could play the first round. I mean, it could easily be your first game of the season, you know, and the league could start a week or two earlier, and you could play, you know, League Cup, Champions League qualifiers, League Cup. But something's got to be done about it, because it is a trophy, and it is, because it's been fairly unimportant for the last, what, 10, 15, 20 years. When it was a Coca-Cola Cup, when Janssen won, it was a good tournament to win. First trophy of the year, but...
But that's because everything in the 90s was shite.
No, but, you know what I mean, it's like, it got to the point where, when we were winning it, you were... Well, maybe not, but sponsors, BBC, they all wanted a Rangers-Celtic final. Celtic Rangers in the final, unless it was a bad tournament. So, you know, we did play them twice in the last couple of years in the final. Well, before they went bust. But
there's a lot of things as well that they don't help themselves, that, you know, I got home last night and caught the end of the Man U game. And then you get the draw straight after, so you get a bit of momentum. Whereas it's mid-November or something, early November, before Celtic get the draw for that. It's like, just, you know, it's little things like that where you think, you're not helping yourself. And I think take away the semi-finals at Hampden. There's no need for that. Just play it at Easter Road or, you know, whatever and stuff. Make it easy for the fans to get to. There's no need for it to be at Hampden this early. You know, everyone jokes and cringes at how Hampden looks at the semi-finals in the League Cup. Even if Celtic are there, you give them three stands at Easter Road if they want, and a stand to the St Johnstone fans that want to turn up. That I was at Aberdeen St Johnstone a few years ago when they had it, when Hampden was closed, and the atmosphere at Tynecastle that day was outstanding. And it's just little things like that it makes it look a bit better when, you know, even if it is just a 20,000 seater stadium, fill it up, it looks good. You know, it's just little things that people can do. Don't just stick with the status quo for the sake of it. You know, it's just annoying.
The problem you have there, though, is you're always going to have more demand than a 20,000 seater stadium. there's always going to be more than 20,000-25,000 at a semi-final.
I suppose it depends. Even if you say, what's the average Celtic attendance, say, at Hampden for a semi-final League Cup? Maybe 15,000?
I would say maybe 20, more than that. Well, more than that.
Say it was against, say we drew, I don't know, Ross County or something like that. It's, I don't know, it's just little things like that. Even if it has to take a few less fans get into the game, at least it looks good on the TV, and it's not just at all, look at Scottish football, there's no fans there.
But it's just, if you do that, fans are going to go off their head, and at the end of the day, fans are the paying customers, and if they can't get a ticket because you've played it at a smaller ground, it's just, I know what you're saying, but I just think it's, you know,
I mean,
you can't,
you need the other, you need other teams customers to bring along sort of big fans as well, and you know, Celtic probably do their best to bring fans along. You know, it's easy for them being a home sort of ground, but it's just little things like that. It just annoys you, just seeing Hampden look just empty and unenthusiastic. It kind of kills a bit of the vibe. Or even if they do it similar to the English league, that have a home game and a second game away from home, a two-legged tie, you know, it brings a bit of entertainment to it. And there's enough spaces in the calendar to fit something like that in, I think that would be a good idea, actually.
Yeah, I'd be quite up for something like that. I think
definitely.
It'd be quite a bit of excitement, two legs.
No, I don't think it just adds another game onto the calendar. I think they're trying to get it done quicker rather than sooner.
But then if you think you've got between now and end of January time before the semi-final, I mean, you can easily fit in, you know, even if it's a few weeks apart, you still can. There's still plenty of chances, I think, to fit something in.
I'm really looking forward to this. What about Jeff Janey's Aguirre having a wee bust up on the training ground?
I think it happens at most training grounds. I just don't like it. I don't like it because it just adds to that whole thing that everything isn't as rosy as it should be at Celtic. You don't want to see teammates fighting, but
it just strikes you as a grade A knob as well. That, like, it didn't surprise me when it was like an unnamed player hit him. You thought, all right, I know who it is. It's you know, it happens, so I'm not too annoyed, but it's just pretty embarrassing.
Like, for all accounts, I don't think Chief Dew was totally in the wrong for what I'd heard, but apparently Zagiri was throwing about some nasty tackles, and
which I find surprising.
Caught the wrong person with one of them. But it just, people that say we should assign Chief Dew because his mentality, I've got something to talk about, and that's daft. The picture probably made it a lot worse than it was. You know, he probably just grazed him, he's put or something. I don't think he bat him.
Paul Payton was around, I think.
Aye. It just, it's not really something you want to read about, you know, especially when they were coming off the back of the Mulder result. I mean, if it had happened on, like, Friday morning, it probably would, with the comments hanging all that, it probably would have been made it to be even bigger a situation, but it just doesn't really make good read when you're hoping for just a bit of normality with Celtic, then that happens, especially a day before a game. Game at Tynecastle, but I wouldn't fine any of them or sack any of them and whatever, but I hope it doesn't happen again. And but it's kind of been blown out of proportion a wee bit, I'd imagine, but
par for the course, I think, for
I just don't want to read it. I think it just makes bad reading on a club that you've got players fighting at training. I suppose it happens everywhere.
Aye. Hey, so moving on, this Saturday on Halloween, the champions are at home to the title pretenders, Aberdeen. How do you see it going, and what's your prediction? I'll start with Hunter.
3-0 Celtic. I think it'll be, well, Aberdeen's run of form, how easily we beat them. Well, the last game at Celtic Park, they gave us quite a good game when we beat them 2-1 last season. But I don't see them, especially in their form at the moment, and I think our players will be up for it. I think we'll win comfortably.
I think it'll be 2-1. I think it'll be quite an easy 2-1. I think Aberdeen will come and play, which will help. So yeah, I can see us scoring a couple goals if a team comes to Celtic Park and are relatively open. And I think Aberdeen might score an odd consolation goal, but I don't think it'll be a stressful game or really anything to worry about. I think it, you know, the title race will be firmly finished come Saturday afternoon.
Aberdeen are on a terrible runner for them, but I expect them to play a lot better. They'll be right up for it on Saturday. It's no must not lose for them. You know, obviously Celtic are probably going to win the league anyway, but a defeat doesn't automatically end the title race or that, but Aberdeen definitely need to put a better showing in than what they have done. I'd imagine they will, but I still think Celtic will pull away in the end. I can see it being maybe tight early on and Celtic going in maybe one up at half time, but I think they'll probably win about 2 or 3 nil. But I think the bigger game's Mulder.
I agree. This time last month I would have been a lot more worried, but Aberdeen just seem to be in terrible form just now. I reckon it'll probably be in our case a Celtic tight opening, and then if we get that goal before half time, just on that, we'll pick them off, probably win. I'd go for 3-0 as well.
I think it all just depends on how we play. rather than how they play. If we just play to our best and how we can play, then there shouldn't really be any problem.
Aye, exactly. Because that was... We were terrible, I think,
the Aberdeen fans, I know, well, my old man, he's going to be in the Aberdeen end that day, and I know a few dandy dons that are going to be in amongst the Celtic support that day, and they're not really kind of expecting much. I think that the bad run of form they've already been on has sort of kicked the stuffing out of them. Like a few, like a month ago or whenever Aberdeen beat Celtic, my mum was telling me that my dad was watching like the highlights at 2 in the morning and like drunk after a night out, just showing my brother, who has no interest in football, son, look at this, oh, here we go, this is when we score the winner and all that sort of stuff. And from that point to, you know, now this, you know, the confidence has been kicked out of them. You know, if they had beaten Motherwell, I think they would have had the, you know, the tail between their legs, kind of a bit excited, but I think they're not expecting to win now. I think it's they know it's over already, and you know, it was maybe a misplaced confidence.
I 100% agree, and like you say, there, the Mulder game is much more important, so
it's
almost just as important that we come through without any more injuries than us, that we get that we put a good performance in. Well, I think we will. I think 3-0 go for.
Carol Quill scored his first goal on Saturday.
I thought you'd make an appearance at Tynecastle yesterday.
And I think Scott Allen will play on Saturday, but he'll get a run in because, even though I know it's reserves, but my pals at the game the other night, they played Hearts and Dumbarton.
Tell Paul I said hi.
And he said Scott Allen was good coming back for his injury. He looked sharp, he's the best player in the park, and his reserves, but I think Aaron's got, I think he'll be in the team before too long. Certainly getting more and more sub appearances.
Yeah, I'd like to see him get a run and stuff. That I like to see a young Scottish talent get a good run in the team, and you know, it's not someone I claim to know much about, but I'm quite curious to see how he plays considering the race for his signature and see if he's up to scratch.
My biggest fear is that Dyer's got to do an Armstrong way and put him on the
side. Well, nobody can get Johansson's place.
No, Rogic can, he started in early games.
That's only really when Johansson's out injured, but
Johansson was good last night.
I thought he was good actually. I thought he played better than they had. He done well for that first goal as well, because he goes in for it, which...
And something that annoys me is people go on about Johansson or Commons, but I think the majority of our games this year both have started, so I don't think it's an either or with they two. But I can't really like Johansson, but he's been absolutely awful the rest of the season. But I thought he played really well last night, and I hope that's the start of him getting back to somewhere near his best.
My wild prediction for Saturday as well, that Simeonovic will get his first goal. Be an absolute screamer for 30 yards.
Well, they need to stop this high hanging back post corner to him. Every time he's been in a team, that's what they've done, and it's no worked, which is my biggest thing with Celtic now. Step.
I thought Armstrong's corners were very poor last night. I'm surprised nobody else took over after it was.
Like Paul Hartley, like I love Paul Hartley, but his corners were dire at times. Like it's either flat and in the front post where it gets cleared, or it's away with the back. But can it be hard just to pop? Cross into an area and let the big guys go attack it.
Apparently it is.
As we're playing Aberdeen at the weekend, I thought I'd take a chance to go over some of our favourite games against the Dandy Dons. So I'll start with the guest there, Pod Lee. What's your highlights from over the years?
I'm going to sound like John Reid here, but it was actually when Celtic lost 4-2 to Aberdeen a few... Was it Strachan's second last season?
This was going to go on my list for all the wrong reasons.
I was at the game. And I think it's the only ever time I've been to a football game with my brother. And it was such a ridiculous, ridiculous game. I remember Tom Boyd was sat behind us. And I think my brother was drunk from the night before. And it was, you know, he was just sitting there just giving out abuse to Aberdeen fans. Just, I think he was caught up in the moment. And it was just a weird game. I always remember Hinkle hitting the bar just before McDonald's scored a few minutes earlier. And was it Xander Diamond that scored? The last two goals and stuff. It was just crazy, and it sort of started a trend in my family that my grandfather's side of the family are Dandy Dons, and he, the whole way back, I was in Edinburgh at the time, and the whole way back on that supporters bus, just texted me non-stop abuse about how shit we were and how we'd lost and everything like that. And then for, you know, all the way up until kind of he passed away, that I think he just would abuse me any time Celtic lost, and I'd return the favour if Aberdeen lost pretty much every week. So it kind of became a game that sort of started a bit of a tradition for me, and so I kind of look on it with quite an amusement that the game was quite ridiculous. You know, they scored, we scored, they scored, we hit the post, we score, they score two goals too quickly. It was just a crazy game, and it was just something that just started a bit of a tradition for me. And, I kind of think of it quite fondly in a way that it was an entertainment game of Scottish football, and that's very rare to get, that Celtic are on the losing end of a fun game like that, in a way.
Just on that game, that was my first and only trip to Pittodrie.
Oh, wow.
And as people know, if you know Dumbarton, the turf war, shall we say, is Bruce Herrin-Delsmeyer. So I go in the middle of January, freezing. I leave my house at 7 in the morning to go all the way up to Aberdeen to see a boy from Delsmeyer score two goals against us. Wasn't very a great day. Also remembered for the fact that I was right down the front. I think I was about 3 rows to the front. And I gave the boy Stuart Duff an absolute powering, who was down the left for Aberdeen. And he got the ball after about 10 minutes and beat, I think it was Andy Hickle, put across into the box and scored. And when he came all the way back up, he made a point of looking for me and just said something along the lines of, did you like that or something? To which Celtic scored immediately, which led to me giving it back to him. And then I think he set a second goal up as well. So, wasn't it a great day for me? Just on that game, I think that was the beginning of the end. A Stratton, wasn't it? Yeah.
I mean, I thought Scott Brown was on really good form at that time, because he won the Player of the Year.
I won the Player of the Year,
I mean, he was cracking that year, and then, but it was Mark Brown was shocking that day. I've never seen a goalkeeper look so small. That was always the main thing I remember about that game. He looked tiny every time someone was at the ball or anything like that. He could have been my size, and I'm a hobbit.
It's that. I remember because we'd got into Pittodrie about 1:15, and Boric was training. And he got injured in the warm-up.
Aye.
So, Miran Misun, remember him?
I remember that, yeah.
He came out of the stand and put a pair of goalie gloves on. And Mark Brown was throwing the ball towards him, and I thought, surely he's not going to pick up. I mean, that way, then it came up, sub-goalkeeper Miran Misun. And I always remember, right at the end of that game, must have been about 92 minutes, some guy, how's Boric not playing anyway? That's Stratton's decision to drop Boric or something, which obviously was never ever going to do. And my pal who'd sat soaking, just went on a mad rant about how Boric had got injured in the warm-up and this guy should pay more attention. So it was a dark, dark day. Oh,
it was one of these games as well that kind of put me off going on like supporters clubs buses. I won't name the name of it, but fuck, it was a long day that we'd got up so early to spend like 2 hours outside Aberdeen in some bowling club having shitty sandwiches. Then we got to the game, and then you're just thinking after you've been humped, you just want to go home, and then you stop off again to have some sort of 2 hour bash at a bowling club like 10 miles outside of Aberdeen. And I remember just that Rebel CD just playing over and over for like hours and hours on end, and I couldn't take it. I felt like I was being driven mad that day.
Shouldn't have brought it on the bus with you, man.
I know, but I'm a big Charlie and the Boys fan.
Bruce, you any other highlights?
I've got a couple. I'm trying to remember Aberdeen games I was at. The one Aberdeen game I was at was when Vinnie Guerrero back-heeled in the winner.
He
scored early. I think Samara scored after about 5 minutes, and then my favourite player, Charlie McGrew, scored twice for Aberdeen. And then Celtic, I'm pretty sure they brought McGiddy on and McDonald. Or they might have started McGiddy, but they brought McDonald on. McDonald scored, and then Benninger backheeled in the winner. Which was very good, Heslick's first goal that year. And he didn't score his second until Aberdeen came to Celtic Park. Pretty sure it was Aberdeen. Try and remember all Aberdeen. I was been at a couple. Obviously, a 9-0 game stuns out that day. You know, seeing things. As day Celtic struck a blow to the corruption that is the SFA, because we won 3 penalties that day.
Not to sound like Paul Hartley gets sent off for Aberdeen.
Aye, and Rogic, no, Rogic, Rogney gets sent off for Celtic.
Not to sound like a bit more of a John Reid, but another game where we really messed up, but it was kind of a good one to look back on, was the 4-4 game. Remember the Robbie Keane, Kamara?
Edson Braffitt for
the
NBA.
Aye, and even at the end, he had a little pinger from about halfway. And it was just that was a bonkers game. I remember just watching it, because my dad was passing through Edinburgh that day, so we went to a pub to watch Big Licks do the game. Oh, we're winning and all that sort of stuff. You know, we were shy that season, but it was really good to be Aberdeen. And just remember it when it went to 4-4 and stuff, that penalty, and it was just like, for fuck's sake, man. It was just And I think my dad was just so drunk on bravado, just like fist pumping in this Edinburgh pub. Yes, get it fucking up, yous. And it was, oh, the embarrassment on so many levels was just unreal.
I think, see if you think the defence was bad, they knew. Any time Celtic conceded a free kick and anywhere near the centre circle, and that Mowbray team was just panic stations.
Oh, aye.
It was, if I was 70 instead of 17 that season, that I would have died. I couldn't have took much merit. I mean, they just, like, players like Dan Day, who are martyrs now, you know what I mean? He gets sent off that day for celebrating.
Right, was it 4-4 and stuff that just it's, after we scored, or was it just before? I can't remember.
I think Robbie Keane or McGeady made it 4-2. I think it was McGeady. And then he jumped into the crowd to celebrate despite the goal being up the other end of the park. And then in the 93rd minute when it was 4-3, I think it might have been Jeffrey Devisher or something, but the boy down the right took the ball and Adair boosted him into Celtic end and get sent off for it, and Aberdeen scored for that free kick. It was 4 each and he got sent off and Aberdeen missed a chance to win it 5-4, I can't remember.
I remember us definitely having a chance when it went 4-4. Braffied had a good hit on it and it was well saved, but oh god, he was an atrocious player.
He decided just to catch the ball.
I just don't know what was going through his head.
Do you remember, this will sound bad enough, but remember we got beat 3-2 off them in 98 and I think we missed 2 penalties and scored one. I think we get 3 penalties. I think Burley missed one. I think Donnelly missed one. I think Larson scored. And we wore that black top with the kind of thin lime green stripes. That was a good... But memories of the 9-0 game was great.
Oh, aye. Because I remember coming back on the bus from work, just looking at it, went 1-0, 2-0. And I think it was 4-0 at half-time. I remember just watching a shitty feed of it on the laptop, just sending text message after text message to all my kind of Aberdeen family and friends. It was just... I couldn't believe it. It was surreal to watch. Everything that we touched went in.
I think it was the 6th and 7th goal, or maybe the 7th and 8th. It was the 7th and the 8th. Ledley crossed the ball into the box and everybody missed it. And me and this boy next to me were arguing that he said Stokes touched it and I said it was Ledley's goal. And I'm not joking, for that kick off, the boy Maguire got the ball and dribbled it about 20 yards and just gave it to Stokes and put Stokes through and goal. Stokes scored.
Was it Josh McGuinness that scored? Was it him that scored a peach of an own goal with a proper finish and stuff? That was one of the best goals of the day.
I'm pretty sure McGee was playing him
at right back. Was he not?
He definitely played at right back, that boy, for a spell. I'm pretty sure the ball got volleyed at goal, and I think maybe was it Langfield tipped the ball onto him or something, or he headed the ball by Langfield. It was a really good own goal. That's memorable for me because. The other guy at the off side of me kept going on about how he was for the Falls Road and Niall McGinn was his neighbour. And Niall McGinn was like the only Celtic player that got no joy that day.
Did you not get subbed off?
I got subbed off at half time because obviously wrong, he'd been sent off. But this guy just raved about McGinn and he was the worst player in the park. And Aberdeen was beat 4-0 and McGinn was by far and away the worst player in the park. So as soon as McGinn got took off, that guy moved around the corner and left me alone.
Hunt, are you getting any highlights?
Yeah, thanks for coming to me.
Obviously
in a 9-0, like the boy said. I always remember it was at the start of John Barnes' time, we beat them 5-0 up at Pittodrie.
Fiduca and Larson.
He kind of sticks out as one of the first I remember. When we beat them 3-1 at Pittodrie and then Mowbray's first day, I think we 3-0 up at half time and we were playing some really good football.
Aye.
And I thought this was the makings of what could have been a special team. Obviously that didn't turn out quite well.
I remember saying after that game, I came out of Pittodrie going, Celtic are back. That is the team I know and love. They are back. so naive. I swear to God, I said that.
McGeady's goal that day was an absolute feat.
Oh, aye. What was his name that scored for Aberdeen as well? The Rangers boy.
Aluko.
He scored a peach as well.
His goal's a nice goal. But I was fat that Everton seemed to click that day because we had a really good pre-season under Mowbray. Well, we won the
Wembley Cup.
Aye. But we came back for Dynamo Moscow beat us at home. We went to Uren and won.
Yeah.
You know, we never ever won these games away from home in Europe. Uren and won. And we scored Samaras in the last minute, and then you go to Aberdeen. I know we had Arsenal, Arsenal put us out in that, but there was a good feeling about that first 4, 5, 6 weeks under Mowbray.
Yeah. I remember the chance of bringing on the Arsenal at the end of that Aberdeen game. We thought, what? I'm feeling pretty confident, and then.
I remember that I remember that, and then that night Arsenal beat Everton 6-1.
Ah, that's right, Edison Park.
And you thought, oh, wait, no. There was a right good feeling around about that, because the team seemed to click early on. Like, Fortuny was playing well up front. You know, he was bringing, like, players like Nagida, he was bringing them into the game, and they were being much more effective. Hinkle.
McDonald was bashing star. On as well.
McDonald.
The biggest problem. The world beater as well.
Aye, the biggest problem with Mowbray is in the middle of the park, because he let players like, they dropped Robson, Guemo couldn't pass a ball, although I liked Guemo a wee bit. But as I say, there was a right good feeling about that team then, and it's like the Barnes thing, so. The next Celtic manager, its first games at Aberdeen, I hope they get beat.
I think, though, my most memorable Aberdeen game was 4-3 game at Celtic Park under Neil Lennon. I think it was like, I actually won some money off that because I had Charlie Mulgrew any time. And I think Rangers were playing somebody like Elgin or something. And I had Lee McCulloch as the next scorer in play, doubled with Charlie Mulgrew. And I think I had like £2 on it and I won 31. So I was
buzzing. Sam Allen scored the lead kick.
Aye. So
we're not getting beat that day 3-1.
Yeah, it was. We went 1-0 up after 12 seconds.
Oh, I saw we did.
Chris Collins scored, and then into the second half we were. I think Aberdeen scored late in the first half to make it 1-1, and then they came out in the second half.
Kelvin Wilson fell on his ass.
Aye, and came out in the second half, and they went 3-1 up, and we were having a terrible time that season. Coming off of European games and that at home, I mean, we ended up that season winning the league with only 78 points.
Had we not lost the last two league games at home or something?
We'd lost, I can't imagine, did we not lost to Kelly maybe or something? I don't know.
Because I know there was a match really, that day, it would have been the first time in the history we'd lost a certain amount of games in the league at home.
I remember.
Inverness beat us.
That's right, yeah.
Ross County beat us and Digmore were 2-0 up in the first half and get beat 3-2.
Aye.
And we lost to somebody else the week before that, or the week after.
Aye. So what, we were 3-1 down with a little over 20 minutes to go, and then Mulgrew scored, and I think he kind of either hit it off the ground or it kind of deflected on its way in. So we're like, you had about 15-20 minutes to go when he scored, and you think, hey, we've got enough in us to at least get an equaliser here. And then Hooper did. I think he scored the equaliser with about 5 minutes to go.
Yeah, the 19th minute, I think.
And then that way, you just feel like we could get the winner, and it was one of the best kind of in recent times, because in the league anyway, because since our former rivals went bust, that there was such a good kind of feeling about a goal so late on. I think it was Lasad knocked it down to Samaras, and then he scored, and it was a real buzz, because I do remember league games, that league domestic games at Celtic, that part. Celtic Park that season were really atrocious. Like, we mentioned the Inverness game where we get beat 1-0, we get beat 2-0 off Kelly, drew 1-1 in the Scottish Cup with Arbroath, drew 1-1 with St Johnstone after the win against Barca. The home games in domestically were fucking awful, so, you know, to get that one, the win there, it was great, and it was a good buzz. It's always good to come back from a 3-1 down.
Yeah, that's what Aberdeen bring. I think that's really enjoyable, is that they will come and try and score goals, that they may have this bravado that they think, oh, we're going to beat them, we're a big team. And they do play like that, to be fair, that they'll come and pretty much play most of the time attacking football to some extent more than others. And that gives opportunities for goals and for them to score some goals. And usually they're on the end of a hammering, but at least they're coming and playing, and it does make a bit of excitement, I think.
One thing I always liked and respected about the Aberdeen games, but we used to play Aberdeen a lot in midweek. They used to always bring down a big crowd. They always brought down a big number to Glasgow, and I think that adds to the game a wee bit, and they'll no doubt bring down a good crowd on Saturday. I mean, even though we weren't involved in the game, when they won the League Cup at Celtic Park, you know, they practically did what Celtic do every autumn in cup finals, you know, they filled the stadium. So,
and I was at that game, and I was in the Aberdeen, and it was a really good atmosphere that day. And, you know, I think it was that sort of years and years of hurt, and they were happy to have won something. Like, when I went to penalty shoot, I thought, this is classic Aberdeen, they're going to ball it to a team they should have pumped. And, you know, I was happy for them, you know, that day. That they're a team that I don't hate, because half my family support them, And, you know, I don't... I like that they'll bam up Celtic fans and Celtic fans will bam up them one. And you need some of that sometimes in Scottish football. Too many of these teams, like Kilmarnock, Hamilton, St Johnstone, they're faceless people. I couldn't tell you a song they sing. Or I like that they, you know, hate us and want to score against us or have a bit of bravado. It makes a change, I think.
Is it always that adds something to your own appreciation of the game when you go to a game and, you know, you see, like, 2,000 fans travelling for Aberdeen when, you know, I mean, teams like Motherwell, Hamilton can only muster a couple of hundred, you know, and it's just down the road compared to Aberdeen. So I think that's why Celtic Aberdeen games always, plus Celtic take a big crowd out of Aberdeen, so they always add a wee bit of maybe an edge to the game. And now these days with Aberdeen being the supposed, you know, contenders for the trophy, it just all adds up, and it'll be a good game. I mean, in Aberdeen are in rotten form, but they're going to race their game, you know, there's no doubt about it. And Celtic will either turn it on and win 4 or 5 nothing, or, you know, it'll be really, really, really close. But Aberdeen need, it's probably more so for the performance for them now, because they have their swaggers took a bit of a knock the last 4 or 5 weeks, so for them it'll be a bit of a good showing, I'd imagine.
What's your favourite game, Darren?
Thanks a lot, Lee. Hey, I've got a few, actually. My first, and I've only been in Fitzroy twice, but my first time was Scottish Cup time, the 07-08 season, where we drew one each with them.
Aye.
It was just your classic cup tie. Both keepers were actually pretty good that day. I think it was Derek Souter that was in goal for Aberdeen. Hartley hit the post, McDonald hit the post, and then it was Jeffrey DeVisher that scored for Aberdeen with 12 minutes to go. Only, and the Aberdeen fans, they loud as you'd expect. And then I just remember Hessel like equalising in the last minute, bundling in a Samaras cross. But no, that was my first trip to Pittodrie, and it was excellent, although it didn't count for much because about a week later they put us out at Celtic Park 1-0.
I always remember that. I was at that Celtic Park game and I looked at the coupon sheet and it was like for Darren Mackay to score and Aberdeen to win 1-0 was 125-1 that day. That was how little they were thought of being able to pull off that game that day. That's always stuck in my head.
Yeah, definitely. My other highlight was just recently last season when Van Dijk scored in the last minute, just because I still think that was the turning point for Dyla, and it was just one of my favourite Celtic goals.
The best, like, birth of the Ronnie Roar as well.
Exactly, I know.
The greatest game since Lisbon 1967, as our technical advisor would say.
I was just delighted because I knew the likes of Lee, Stevie and John Reid were having to delete tweets that they had ready.
I'm sure I had an infamous tweet after that. Something to do with Take That. Not the actual band Take That, that was the phrase used in my tweet. And I get pelters for it.
Yeah, I have no recollection of this.
Is it 4-0 maybe?
Celtic Park. Aye.
I mean, that was a good
team. I mean, they were on the best team in that first half an hour, because that was one of the home games I went to that season and stuff. And it was I was actually wearing a controversial remark here. I was actually wearing a female jacket that day to go to that game. I'd come from work to my girlfriend's just outside of Glasgow, and I decided last minute I would go to the game, catch up with some family before the game, and I'd pop along, and I'd forgotten a jacket, so I had to use her like female barber jacket. So I was cutting around Celtic Park in this really tight female like barber jacket. The sleeves were kind of 3/4 of the way down. I must have looked like an absolute, you know, creep sitting in that stands in that coat.
You could have looked no worse than when you wear a cravat, so...
Oh, that's true.
When the matinee gets cancelled and you end up at a Celtic game.
I know, exactly.
Right, well, we're cutting the arse out of the time, so I will pass this over to say your final words and goodbyes. So we'll start with Hunter.
I'm away, watch Fraser now, so it's been a pleasure to be here. It's been a pleasure to have Lee on the pod. And I can't wait to see him next time he's through in Glasgow.
And Bruce?
I fucking forgot the guy I was going to kid on him last week. So you can just follow me at Copper Blue. I will be tweeting about bands that you've probably never heard of. And
speak for yourself. Any lesbians in those bands?
unconfirmed reports that there'll be plenty of lesbians. In my new, the best heel on Twitter, as I like to call myself. So aye, that's copper_blue_RonnieDelia. Heel the heel.
I'll pass it over to our special guest, Lee.
Thank you very much for having me. I will not be watching the game this weekend, as I'll be having a lovely continental weekend in London. So when Celtic are probably pumping Aberdeen 3-0, I'll be 8 rows from Benedict Cumberbatch watching him perform Hamlet, probably wearing a cravat. So yes, that'll be how I'll be cheering on the boys. I'll keep an eye on them at the matinee over a wine. So come on, you boys, you can do it. yes, I have a feeling there'll be a lot of stuff used against me in this podcast.
I've never been on a podcast. This is it. I'll never get any better than this.
And I kind of thought that. So you can follow me at OC Boy, or you can follow the official podcast at Respect the Pod. Cheers for listening. Hey, well.
Oh, fuck, right,
I'm done. And if you've made it this far, we've got nothing but respect for you. Cheers for listening. Hey, well.